accused of being unpatriotic. But very little, his relationship with God was far more important than even the prospect of an Olympic gold medal. And so he decided not to run in the 100 metres, and he preached in a church in Paris instead. Eric did go on to compete in the 200 metres and 400 metres on the weekdays. And before the 400 metres, he was handed a slip of paper, as we saw, that read the words, "Those who honour me, I will honour." He went on to win the race and the gold medal in a world record time of 47.6 seconds. Eric went on to live a life as a missionary in China, where he would die serving God there. The film brings into sharp focus the fourth commandment, to remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. While many enjoyed the film and admired the fact that Eric Liddell was prepared to stand for the principles, no matter the cost, few today are willing to make such sacrifices. As we heard from Heather and from Jill, very helpfully, by the way, we really appreciated that, that there's been a fundamental shift for how we use Sundays these days, not just by our society, but also in the church, which sadly can, so often is the case, follow on behind. Certainly society sees things very differently these days, with shopping hours and sports teams and technology. I say technology because our society today has become much more individualistic. Technology is lie to the soul. The lie being that it's all right to be alone. You don't need God. You don't need people. You don't need specifically to come together as God's people. And of course, that's a lie. We need both in the unique setting that church provides. There's complications around the subject, and so we have to tread carefully and try to be accurately. So if we cast our minds back to last week, for those who are here, Mike Nice helped us with that kind of tightrope as he kind of placed down the centre of the church, as we described the life of Blondin, that tightrope walker that walked across the Niagara Falls, 160 foot up in the air with a safety net. We can perhaps think about that tightrope in a kind of different way, because that's a little bit like approaching the subject of the Sabbath. On the one side, you can easily fall dangerously into legalism and turn the relationship that we have in God into just a kind of set of rules, a burden that's impossible to keep for many different Christian folk, particularly those who work on Sundays, and myself included. And on the other side of the tightrope, you have, the danger of Christian license, meaning that the Christian is free to work some things out for themselves. I say with themselves, but of course with the help of the Spirit of God and the Word of God in community with others. But nonetheless, work things out for themselves. And so the danger is kind of, I don't know, having too much license, becoming sort of too free and falling far away from the path and into sin and perhaps leading others to do the same. Originally, the Sabbath keeping was a requirement for anyone under living in Old Testament times, in the Old Covenant. But if you're a Christian, we live under the New Covenant. We live within New Testament times. I got a letter the other day. It was about a credit card that I use very rarely. I kind of keep it ticking over with small payments from time to time. But nonetheless, the credit company, they wrote to me about conditions and obligations that I have to maintain, which has been updated and replaced. Many previous conditions no longer apply, but some did. And that's a little bit like the Old Testament law. I am no longer obligated to make certain sacrifices and offerings, just described all the way through perhaps the book of Leviticus. I'm no longer obligated to circumcise my children or abstain from pork and prawns. However, I must, like Old Testament people, continue to put aside immorality and gossip and dishonesty and anger, because those things are incompatible with the new life in Jesus Christ. And so, like the updated credit card agreement, there is continuity and discontinuity with the old agreement at the old covenant. There are some things that transcend both agreements, both covenants. And it's understanding what those things are, and it's living them out. So we haven't got time to go through all of them, but just to consider one or two this morning. And just one of them is the basic requirement of rest. The rest from the demands of work. The Hebrew word for Sabbath means to cease, to draw to an end. In the Sabbath, God was drawing work to an end. So it is appropriate to rest. There are many people, and I know, who find it absolutely impossible to rest, who are always on the move. But then it seems God would know how stubborn that we are, and so he doesn't just tell us to rest, that he actually uses himself as an example. And so we read it, didn't we, in those verses, that right in the very beginning, after finishing his own work of creating the world, he sets the example and he rests on the seventh day. And so here in Exodus, granted, it's sort of many generations on of how desperately it went wrong soon after how God rested in the beginning. But nonetheless, God is reintroducing, if you like, that creation pattern once again. He's bringing people back to how it was always meant to be. And so resting does feel good. It does feel right. We look forward to it. Because that is the way we have been made. We've been made in the image of a God. He's a hard-working God, but we've also been made in the image of a God who rested too. We've been made not to be like robots. Because if we were like robots, we would surely break down. As many have done through overwork and the stresses and strains of work. Workaholics leads to broken individuals and broken marriages and broken families. There's also a key number here in seven. So in the law of Israel, the land had to be left fallow every seventh year for a Sabbath rest for the crop production. And then there was also a special year on seven times seven. On the 49th year, there was a fresh beginning where debts were cancelled and slaves were freed and the land kind of reverted to its original owner. But the most fundamental cycle was seven. 7 days a week, and on the seventh day was the Sabbath. We can make too much of numbers, but nonetheless, in the Bible, seven is a perfect number. And it's interesting that governments have tried to introduce different patterns of work and rest, whether it be a 10-day week or working non-stop, as it was in ancient Israel, certainly for the slaves. And the goal being always to increase kind of efficiency, if you want to put it that way. But human beings have been made to rest at least one day in the seventh. You can remember the context. Israel had been a slave nation. They were slaves. They didn't have rest. They never had a day off. They wouldn't take annual leave. They wouldn't be looking forward to a holiday. They certainly wouldn't have been taking early retirement. And so for God to sanction a Sabbath day, a day, or a kind of holiday, if you want to put it that way, that was unheard of. That was a real sign of God's new blessing and grace upon their lives. But it's interesting, isn't it, is that the one commandment out of all of the ten that says remember is the one that society and actually many in the church have seemed to have forgotten. So resting is not a time to quickly slope off to the sports fields, the shopping centre, or even just sleep off a hangover. Not resting from God, we are resting in God, and there's a very big difference. So we can think that perhaps shopping or sport or sleep or whatever it is, instead of meeting with God, we can think, well, you know, I'm tired. I need these things. These things tap into me. They renew me. They help me. They de-stress me. I need a balance in my life. As if these things will bring us the things that we think that we need. But actually, we don't need them. And we certainly don't need a hangover. But if we go to these things for the expense of meeting with God and his people, ironically, they will work against us. They will lead us to a place of being tired and worn out and stressed and strained. Because the psalmist says we need to rest in God, not rest from God. The psalmist would say the greatest rest is in God alone. Jesus said himself, he says, "Come to me, you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take that yoke upon you and me and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and I give rest for your soul." Jesus says, "I have come to bring life and all its fullness. I am the bread of life. If there is something missing in your individual life and the life of your family, then it will be found in me. Come to me," he says, "and I will give you rest." Does the day that we hold church on actually matter? I don't think so. But we have to meet. We have to meet, and this church, like most other churches, meet on Sunday mornings. Churches have been doing that for 2,000 years. It used to be on Saturday for Jewish people in Jesus' day, soon after Jesus' resurrection. As Jesus died and rose again, he told his disciples, he says, "Go and make disciples of all nations." And the book of Acts is the book that tells us that is exactly what happened. But as non-Jewish churches began to kind of spring up all over the place in different countries outside of Israel, churches full of people that are brought full of their own kind of non-Jewish traditions, then very soon, really, in the first century, also described in Acts, that the church began to meet on Saturdays. So we could try that. Yeah, if that's what people wanted, if you want to sort of meet on a Saturday, we could try Saturday. We could even try Saturday evening. Could give that a go. And I say that because Bruce Ray, an American writer, writing from an American perspective, granted, but he says where church services are now increasingly offered on Saturday evening, he says this: by having church services on Saturday night, people can have the whole day on Sunday to go hiking, sailing, shopping without being inconvenienced by having to attend church services. He continues, "We can just fit God into our schedules the way we do piano lessons and dental appointments. And then if something more interesting comes along, then we can just cancel or reschedule. Worship services that are quick and easy and convenient and user-friendly. Little or no sacrifice required." And it's challenging. And of course, we need to be careful. Going back to the tightrope of license and legalism. We need to be careful that we can approach the subject legalistically, judging others and their situations. Because today has become more and more complicated. We've got shift workers and those who work on Sundays, or policemen and fire brigade and nurses. And our circumstances are so different, aren't they? An illness could come across an individual at any time, an individual or perhaps someone in the family. And so Jesus said, he says, "Do not judge others, or you yourselves will be judged." Because "don't judge me, don't judge you" can become also, however, a convenient excuse, a kind of justifying one-liner. God in Jesus Christ, he is going to come one day to judge all of our lives, and we have to leave that to him. He's coming to judge. But he's also coming to save. And really, we need to use that thought, the fact that Jesus is coming to save, that Christian hope of salvation in that moment, to lead us into God's presence, not away from him. I say that because in Hebrews 10, it says this. It says, "Let us consider how to spur one another to love and good works. Let us not neglect meeting together, as some have become in the habit of doing. But let us encourage one another more. And all the more as you see that day of judgment and salvation, as you see that day approaching." So take rest. Do that in a way that is right for you in the week, at the end of the week, but not at the expense of meeting together as God's people. This is church, here this morning. Not a social group. Not four people getting together on Starbucks. Not the golf course, not the cinema, not our young people, they meet together at TNT on Tuesdays and Dynamites on Fridays. It's not church. There's wonderful things that go on in those places, and some of them are hugely important to the life of this church, but it's not Church, this is church. A place where we come together. Different people from old and young and rich and poor and black and white. People that might just come together in obedience to Jesus' commands to meet, to speak to him, to listen to him, to seek to glorify him, and doing that by the power of the Holy Spirit, that he might uniquely work in all of our lives to build us up individually and to build us up to be the people that he would want us to be. And one of the things that he wants to do, he wants to make us different from those around us. When God gave the commandments to his people, that God's people were surrounded by multi-god worshipping, immoral, murdering, stealing people. And God's purpose in the commandments were that as people obeyed his commands, that they, these surrounding nations, people who lived so terribly, would look upon the holy lives of God's people and be attracted away from their terrible lives towards God and his life. The Sabbath was part of making God's people different. Church comes from the word, it's a Hebrew word, ecclesia. It means called out ones. That is what we are. We are people here this morning that God has called out from our homes to meet here this morning, that we might be different from those people around us. He's called us out from society, that we might be different from society. And a huge part of that difference is how we spend our time. J. John, a Christian writer, he says this. It's about time. He says, maybe that is why there is such a battle in this area. It's not simply a question of legislation or trading hours about cultural practices. It's about the lordship of our lives and our time. This commandment addresses who controls our time. He carries on. He said, by keeping God's day of rest, we proclaim to ourselves and to the world watching on that God runs our lives. He is Lord of our lives. He is Lord of our time. Danny, can you just grab the end of this table for me? Thank you. 1, 2, 3, up we go.